Today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim, brought to you from Netanya, Eretz Chemda Teivor Chava. And today's daf is daf Samach. Now, daf Samach, that is really a daf to remember, because it's got a lot of very fundamental nekudas on it, and we quote from it so often, so it'll be easy to remember this daf. We were in the middle of the discussions between Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania and Adrian Caesar and so on. So he would often engage in these Christian-type arguments. So Omar, I were two lines up from the bottom on Ahmed Beis, I think is where we dropped off. Omar Kesar and Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania. I insist, Beina de Ichzi la Elohaichem. After all, the Torah keeps saying, you know, that Moshe Rabbeinu would be able to panim al panim, and the Nevi'im keep giving yugmos. I would like to see your God. Omar le lo matzita chazita le. There's no way you're going to be able to do that. Omar le, so Caesar says, oh, but I insist. Yivra chazina le. I mean, you know, you're talking to the great and glorious Caesar. Okay, says Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania, tell you what. Why don't we go outside and let's try to get you used to the steps you need to see God. So he takes him right outside in the middle of the summer. And so he takes him out against the sun. And he says, okay, first thing is, you have to learn to stare through the sun. So just look at the sun. He says, I can't. Lomatina. So Yeshua laughs at him. Oh, come on, man. Yuma, the sun? I mean, this is a joke. There's some little crummy star somewhere, and you're telling me you can't even look at, like, one of his infinite number of mishamshim? You're going to try to look at him? You should be ashamed of yourself. So Yuma, the chad mishamshe, the kameku chabrichu, amet lo matzino de stakule beis. So now you want to go further than that? Oh, my dear Caesar. Another time, so Caesar says, Omar Kesler of Yeshua ben Hanania, you know, you guys, you're always talking about bringing korbanos and lechem elokecha. I'll show you what a real seuda is for God. Get a little bit of covet here. You guys are a joke. So I want to make a real seuda for your God. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania says to him, ain't no way, Jose. Why not? Says Caesar. Nafish chelvase. He's got a lot of guests. I mean, you want to make a seuda, and I don't think you're going to find a place like that. Oh, my way. So Caesar says, Ivra, but I insist. After all, I can get anything done. Okay, says Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania. I've got a great idea then. Why don't we find a really broad area, maybe on the banks of the river? So Pokes, obviously, the Gita de Revisa, where, of course, there's also a lot of storms and so okay. Go out to the edge of this river, to the banks of this river. It's called the Revisa River. That's why it's called Revisa. And that's a big place. Lots of room there for millions of guests. And we'll try to give it a go. Okay. So Caesar brings out his men and their Torah Shita, Yarche, Kaita, the entire 6 months of summer. They get everything set up, all of the tables, the flowers. I mean, it was an incredible scene for millions of guests. And guess what? One night, a wind comes along. It takes the whole thing out into the sea. Ota zika kanche liyama. Oh, my gosh, Caesar. All right. I don't give in so fast. So he then works the 6 months of winter. And again, everything is about ready. Comes along a storm and washes every last bit into the sea. So he asks Rabbi Yeshua, I don't understand. What is all of this about? Well, what do you expect, says Rabbi Yeshua? I mean, he always sends a couple of maintenance crews ahead of him. So there's the people that do the sweeping. They were the ones that got rid of the first soda. And then there's the ones that sprinkle the floors, you know, make sure everything is clean. That was the second one. You forgot to take that into account? My gosh. I mean, how are you going to handle the guests? Oh, God, he says. Yochi lo matzina, no, I can't handle this. Okay. So then, Caesar had a daughter. So the daughter also was into making fun of the way in which the Jews would give these mishalim for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So they say, she says to Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania, you know, I guess your God is a carpenter. I mean, after all, it says, HaMikarev HaMayim Aliyotav. So he puts up the roof beams on his second stories over there, and he puts it up with water. Why don't you ask him to do me a favor, and he should make me chada mistorita, he should make me a little spinning thing, a bobbin. You know, they used to, the women used to go around with the spinning bobbins, so I can make some thread. After all, for a carpenter like him, it shouldn't be much to send me a nice high-quality bobbin, would it? Oh, absolutely, he said. I'll take care of that. Boy, Rachmiala. So he is mispalal for her, and she ends up getting leprosy. Now, the minig in Rome was that anyone who got leprosy, they would put them outdoors in a special area and would give them a bobbin to work on spinning threads, so people would see them and they would be mevakish rachamim for them. And that was their minig. So, bo rachmi alaminga. So sure enough, she gets leprosy, and they put her in the shuk, like any other leper. And utva b'shuka deromi v'yavi la masterita. They give her, sure enough, this bobbin to attract attention, because that was their minig. Davina yige, their minig was they called the minga barune. Anybody who had tzaras in Rome, they would give her a miriam, yavile misterita, the yati vishuka, and the person would sit in the marketplace where people would go by, the sata davlele, and he would sit there making thread, in order that people passing by would pray for him. Anyway, one day Rabbi Yoshua ben Hananya went passing by in the shuk of Rome. And sure enough, there is Caesar's ex-princess, is Richie. That's already teasing. Teasing is really inappropriate. So he walks by and he says to her, Oh, isn't that a beautiful masterita? Do you have like a lahoy? You asked for that, didn't you? Look how lovely it is. Tell him to take it back, damn it. Tell him to take it back, she says. Emalei lelach, tell your God, Lishko Madiyavle, I want him to take it back. Oh, says Rabbi Yeshua, dear me. Elohadi dan, our God only knows how to give things. He never knows how to take things. Omar Rabbi Yehuda, you got to know the difference between a shor and a chamor, because a shor is a karsatan or farsatan. Basically, the bigger tummy it has and the bigger feet it has, the more of a shor it is. Rav Reshe v'Rav Genufte, and it's got this big head, and it's got this long tail, and that is the sign of a shor. So if you're selling someone a special shor, it's got to have even a bigger kreisa and paras and so on. The opposite is the case of a donkey. And so the higher the quality of the donkey, the more it's going to actually be, oh boy, Minor Bird, you're making so much noise. The more it's going to be a better donkey. If you're in business, so the halacha would be, if you made a deal about supplying a high-quality shor, a high-quality donkey, these are the signs that are important. The Omer of Yehuda, now speaking about shor, we had that very first shor. Remember we talked about unicorns. Well, it turns out that the very first shor that Adam Harishon was makriv to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that was, remember, we had the whole story about Hanukkah and Christmas and the Saturnalia and how it all started with Adam Harishon, that when he saw that the days were getting shorter, he was sure that that was the beginning of the Misa, that was Nigzar Alav, and he brought a carbon to be Mechaba. Anyway, so what was that shor? That had one horn. Karen Achate Thalo B'mitzcha, that was the original unicorn. And it was Vatitev Lashem Mishor Por, and that's why David HaMelech says that that was something to hold up as a marshal for what HaKadosh Baruch Hu really enjoyed. And I am want to give these beautiful Tehillim of mine that they should be even better in terms of their beauty and poetry. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should enjoy them even better than that Shor Por Makrin Mafriz. And it had, now makrin bepashtus means warrant, which is that it had two horns. And mafriz, which of course we just talked about, the bigger its feet. But I don't understand how you see from there that it was a unicorn. It says makrin. And makrin means that it has horns, not that it has one horn. So makrin is mashma tarite. Omer Nachman, yes, that's true, but it's not written makrin. There's no yud in it, is it? So it could be read as mikeren or makrin instead of makrin, meaning that there's one horn there, just a keren. The Omer of Yehuda, shor shekriva adam harishon. If you note the way that David HaMelech referred to that shor, he said it was makrin mafris. Now that's so weird, because the first thing that a shor does is it walks as an egel, and gradually as it matures, it grows its horns. But to talk about a shor that first had horns and then was makrin is a little strange, isn't it? Ah, but that was the original shor. And that shor, karnav kod mota parsotav, sure enough, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked the earth to produce a shor. So, it is produced head first, don't you think? I mean, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Obviously the chicken, not the egg, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted chickens, right? So then if there's going to be a shor, then there's going to have to be a big daddy of a shor, you know, okay? So that shor appears out of the ground. And what is there first? The horns. So then comes out the horns, and then come out the feet. So makrin bereshiv adar mafris. Obviously, he's referring to the original shor, which proves what Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi always said. This is one of the most chashuv inyanim mamish we've learned. The Omer Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi: Kol maaseh v'reshit b'komatam nivru'u b'da'atam nivru'u b'tzivyonam nivru'u. All things in creation are created, the point at which we view them as created is where they are complete. So they were fully built, they were b'da'atam, which is a double meaning, they were fully intelligent, and they were fully aware of their own creation, and b'tzivyonam nivrim, they were created only according to their own information that they wanted and that they put into the process of their own creation. Shenema vayechulu ha-shamayim v'ha-aretz v'chol tziva'am. Tziva'am has a double meaning, because it's not just tziva'am, the hosts of creation. It's tzivyonam, the desire of creation. Remember, we learned the Rabbeinu Bachya on this, who explains that this means to every extent. And this is the deepest meaning of Im HaMelech B'Malachto Yoshvu Sham. These were the tzaddikim, so to speak, in terms of humanity, who defined the nature of all of creation. And Kol Shekein, each individual, says Rabbeinu Bachya, defined his own life, Milachatchila, not just the overall species, which obviously it's the give and take, the back and forth between the evolution of a species and its interaction in the world that defines how ultimately it works out. But the Rabbeinu Bachya says this in human terms is the back and forth of every human being with the universe, which is part of its tzavi. So that in the end, people lead the lives that was their own tzavi. This is what I always desired. Darash, I pointed out to you, this is an incredible psychological, is expressed psychologically in the fact that no matter what happens to people, they are always, la'achar hamaisen, within the space of just 5 years, usually, they say that that was the only life I could have imagined for myself. And it doesn't matter how awful it was. There was this guy that I told you, it was this guy that had been imprisoned his entire life for something that he didn't do. And he was there 80 years in prison till they figured out with the DNA thing that he never did it. So they let him out and they asked him, so like, you know, what do you think about the fact that your entire life was stolen from you? Oh, he says, it was the most wonderful thing. I could not imagine having a different life than that. But this is true of paraplegics. It's just beyond belief. Cancer sufferers, survivors, and so on. the most important thing that ever happened to me. Dorash Rabbi Chanina bar Papa. Yehi chavod Adonai le'olam, yismach Adonai v'ma'asav. Who said that? Who could tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu in advance? He's not saying Hashem should be happy in what was. He's saying he should be happy in the Maisim. Apparently he's in the middle of his Maisim. Who would be able to say such a thing? Only the Sar HaOlam. Pasuk zeh Sar HaOlam Amaro. This is this whole remiss to the Malach Matat and to the Chanoch who became the Sar HaOlam, the one that was able to translate Maisim Bereishis into the world that we know. And when was this said? Where was this tremendous happiness in HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So this was B'sha'ash Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'mineyu B'ilanot. So we find in the Pasuk that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the Tzibur Vayomer Elohim Tatshei Haaretz Deshe Esev Mazriya Zera Eitz Pri Osepri L'mino Asher Zar'o Bo. So we have this sudden idea of the concept of Lumino. What does that concept of Lumino add to us? It tells us that there was a point in which genetic diversity was made to be difficult to change, so that it had to be Lumino. Remember, in the early stages of evolution, there was absolutely free exchange of genes to be able to get the maximum gene pool, literally, in terms of the seed. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, it's the last stage that everything has to settle down into its own particular mean, which was speciation, that could no longer reproduce with other species. And this became the makor of the importance of the dinim of Kilai, which is so important to us today in terms of Aveda and Tzitzis and so on. So, B'sha'ash Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Luminot, and this was with the Ilanot. That was a tremendous chiddush, and it was only said originally for the trees. And yet, that was in that same pasuk that spoke about the Zera, Esev, and so on. So those disha'im, those very simple and small life forms, made a kal v'chomer for themselves. Im ritzono shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu be'irbuvia. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu desires the mixing of genes, why did he demand of the Ilanot that they have to be Lemino? So obviously, he does not desire a mixture. And if that's the case, it's a kal v'chomer. If Ilanot she'ein darkan latzeit birbuvia, look, trees, they are so individual because they can only grow if there's enough distance between them to allow the proper exposure of each tree to the sunlight that it needs and the nourishment that it needs. So, even so, where they don't look like a mix, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, you have to be very careful that each thing has to maintain its own genetic identity. So, we, the different grasses, we have to be very careful. It's a kal v'chomer that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want mixing of species when it comes to grasses. Miyad kol echad ve'echad yatsa lemino. So at that point, because of that kal v'chomer that they figured out themselves, there became as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu had been mitzaveh them. So this is all a continuation of tzivyonam. This is like the ultimate involvement that it has to apply to us as well. So when that came out, that was when HaKadosh Baruch Hu was happy that finally, that Maisa Bereshis had matured to the point where it had come to recognize the importance of keeping a genetic integrity, which, of course, is very nageya our parsha this week, Parsha Pinchas. And miyad kol echad ve'echad yatsa l'minei. And then that's when the Sar HaOlam said, yich ved Hashem le'olam, yismach Hashem b'ma'asav. This is the moment that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can see a matured my separations. This is what he was waiting for. Now, question is, how does that define the dinim of Kilayim forever? Because what would be the din, asked Ravina, if somebody was markiv shnei disha'im zeh al gavei zeh? Suppose somebody takes two different species, and there are tens of thousands of species of grasses alone that are defined actually as grass, and you went ahead and you mixed your marquee of them, which is the way to mix their genes. So you graph two types of Dishoyim, one onto the other. Would that be a din of Kilayim, according to Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa? Because what Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa has just showed us is that that din of Kilayim was something that was discovered by the Bria about itself, but was never stated by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So do the developments of Bria themselves, does that count as if, since it's a Kal V'Chomer, the Kal V'Chomer is one of the Yud Gimel Midas, but I mean, grass doesn't really do a good job of making Kal V'Chomers, and so is that have a din of Kilayim or not? Kiva de Lokata for Hulamineu doesn't say anything about Lumineu la Halacha in the Tzivoy Hashem, so then there should be no Chiv for Kilayim. Odilma, or do we say that since HaKadosh Baruch Hu, after all, was apparently happy about it, and he, the very next pasuk says, Luminayim, about the Dishayim, it says also that Vatotzia Aretz Desha Luminayim. Amazing. So then it was Bazria Zera Luminayim, as I've pointed out to you on many occasions. This is the same exact pasuk, for obvious reasons, that the Torah says that the Tzivoy was not Mekuyam. Because it's in this same pasuk that it says Eitz Pri and Ozer Pri. So that there were two completely different things, that the Eitz should be the same as the Pri. And in the next pasuk, it doesn't say that. It says Vatotze Eretz Eitz Ozer Pri, but it wasn't Eitz Pri. And this was the primal sin of the earth that allowed for the Eitz Hadas to develop. Again, as I mean, it takes a bit of looking to see this, because we've explained that this was the mocker of the Eitz Hadas, which is the reason that the earth was cursed along with Adam Arishon. And it's in the same pasuk that makes HaKadosh Baruch Hu so happy. What does that tell you? So, basically, the question is, would this be considered to be Kilayim or not? Because since HaKadosh Baruch Hu was maskim, it's ki'ilu, kemandech tibu lemineu damya. Take this indeed is a shayla. Now, Rabbi Shimon ben Paz, he points out a contradiction in Maaseh Bereishis. On the one hand, it says, Vayas Elohim et shnei ha-me'orot ha-gidolim. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the two great lights. And then it goes on to say, et ha-me'or ha-gadol, which is from Shalos Hayom, yes, ha-me'or ha-katan. I understand. How did that happen? First, it says that these are two big lights, and then it says, but one was big and one was small. Now, were they two big lights or not? Ah, the story is, Amra Yareach Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The moon, and you can remember that Daf Samach is shaped like a moon, right? So that you'll remember that all of these beautiful Agadotas are on Daf Samach. So the moon says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono shel Olam, this doesn't make sense. Efshar l'shnei melachim sheishtamshu b'keter achad. I mean, they're supposed to be moshlim. How can you have two melachim that are going to be wearing the same crown? The very meaning of such a crown is that it's absolutely unique, and therefore you can't have two. So how does this work? Omar la says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the moon, you're absolutely correct. Go make yourself small. Hey, wait a minute. This is not fair. I deserve a reward? Why am I the one that has to make myself small? I mean, I say something good and this is what I get for it. What do I get that makes up for my making myself small? Omarla, I'll tell you what, you make yourself small and we'll make up for it by having you appear both by day and by night. So the sun doesn't get that, and this is an extra. So we're giving you a booby prize. You get to shine in the daytime. Never see the sun shining at night, do you? Aha! Says the moon, What good is that, Myra Buse? I mean, like, what kind of gift is that? The Shraga Batira, Maya Hane, who notices a little candle in the broad daylight? I mean, they barely make me out in the broad daylight. Doesn't add anything. All right, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We'll give you another booby prize. Zil, go out and do what I say. And Limnu Bach Yisrael Yomim Vishonim, the calendar will be a lunar calendar. What do you say about that? Homralei, that's a fake out. Yumanami Yevshalomonu Beit Kufuse. Remember the lunar calendar, the whole jazz with the lunar calendar is you're always trying to make it meet up with the solar calendar, and it has to meet, that the Pesach has to be in the Aviv, and Sukkot has to, no. This is really, mamish, a booby prize. Yevshalomonu Beit Kufuse, we need the sun for the Tkufes. It says so beferish in the Torah. So it needs us both. So this doesn't give me anything extra. Tell you what, says HaKadosh Baruch. Zil, likrut tzaddiki bishmech. Tzaddikim will be known as you are known. The katan is always going to be the most choshev. Because take a look at Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu says, Yaakov Avinu is called Yaakov ki katanu, as the Navi says, and all of the tzaddikim, Shmuel is going to be called Shmuel HaKatan. It's not clear who Shmuel HaKatan is. It could be, maybe it's a reference to Shmuel HaKatan in the Gemara, because we don't find that Shmuel HaNavi was called HaKatan, so I don't know what this is exactly. And...
but we relate to him as the Katan, and that's when his mother makes the cloak for him.
Yeah,
right, and it stays with him.
It's not Nikru Bishimcha. It's a little bit. I agree. It's a little funny. It's not called Nikru Bishimcha. And okay, yeah, Rabbanah is right. Everybody relates to Miskatan. True. And then we have David. It says V'David Hu HaKatan. So all of the greatest people. Anyway, the moon is not happy, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees that the moon is not happy. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, okay. So then I'll tell you what. I'm going to ask Klal Yisrael to bring a kapora on me for what I did. Shemi'atati atayareya. V'haynuti omer ishlokish. Ma nishtana. Sa'ir shalosh chodesh. Nemar bo la'ashem. How do you explain the fact that in all of the seirim that are brought on all of the mayadim, all of the musafim, at the end it says, v'sa'ir echad l'chatas. And dafka, by the carbon of Rosh Chodesh, it says, V'siri zimeh chavachatas la'ashem. Why is that la'ashem? And there's obviously something very important about that one, because that is exactly the carbon that we pretend doesn't exist when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, which is the day that we celebrate the actual creation. It's very confusing. So what is that la'ashem? Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Sa'ir Zeh Yed Kapora Alai, Shemiyatati Yatayareyash. Since I made the moon small, I need a kapora. So again, as we pointed out, this is the kapora about the nature of reality. There is no way to change the fact that self-awareness comes hand in hand with the need to be Mamaya Tatsmah. And therefore, of course, the moon needed to be Mamaya Tatsmah. This affects, not coincidentally, the tzaddikim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings Uriah to. And therefore, the Malchus or Avram Avinu, all of these, Moshe Rabbeinu, need to be on the highest madriga of Anova to constantly be Mima'et Tatsmam Ahavti Eschem Amar Hashem, which is the, what is the Ava? Because Minizman Shani Noisim Lechem Gidula Atem Mima'atim Et Atzmechem Lefanai. So the greater the gedula and the greater the awareness, the less there can be any element at all of taking something from that self-awareness. So exactly, because of the, well, let me finish, please. Because of the contradiction in the nature of creation, which means that if at the same time that creation demands this self-awareness, it destroys through its own self-awareness and demands of you to become what appears to be less self-aware, which is really less self-aware, as we were talking about on Friday last, So that means that there's this paradoxical nature of Bria itself. And therefore, that is the kapara that needs to come up, the covet of the Areach, and that Klal Yisrael has to say, which is why we view this as the Kiddush Levana, and we say it's a Kabbalas Bnei Ashchina, because we recognize it as being part of the constant presence of the impact of Maaseh Bereishis Merumas in what we see in the Miyat, the constant Miyat HaLavana, and the Chiddush HaLavana, Sheim HaSidim Nishadish Kaneisa, and that becomes the Yehor HaLavana, Kor Shivas Yimei Bereishis, Kor HaChama, Kor Shivas Yimei Bereishis. So these are very, very fundamental elements about existential aspects unavoidable because of the nature of being in Maaseh Bereishis. But this is why, and this is how Tosfos understands the meaning of the pasuk, Bakeser leYom Chagenu is a reference to Rosh Hashanah, that the Bakeser, says Tosfos, means that we don't mention the Seir of Rosh Chodesh on Rosh Hashanah, which is remarkable. It is mamish like the ultimate Rosh Chodesh is Rosh Hashanah. But that's Gufa, the point. And as Reb Daniel just pointing out, Kol Makom Shata Motzei Gedulasei, Ata Motzei Anavtenusei. Exactly the same Nekuda. Gedula demands Anavtenut. So that is the reason that we have this very unique, on the day of Maaseh Bereishis, since this is the only way for you to exist, we don't bring that kapara, so to speak. We don't mention the element of it by Hashem, because it's included in the Yismach Hashem B'Masav, which is the very idea of the Simcha on Rosh Hashanah, which is Uzichem, as the Pasuk says. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's joy is your Kayah. Now, what is it, Moshe Molshinsky, Moshe Binyamin, my dear? Speak up, sir.
It's very, very interesting that Chana was the only one that davened. She wanted average because she didn't want what thing with not being there. But Daka by school.
Right. Beautiful. And what does our Moshe Reuven want?
I was curious, would you describe the Lemineu in terms of the development and evolution from Eruvia to Lemineu? Is there an equivalent with the Miut HaLavana? Did some element of the development of this solar system and the moon, the sun moon thing, which would be the point of Miut HaLavana?
I'm really sorry. I don't hear well. I'm sure it's not your. I'm going to go see if I can get some kind of hearing aids.
No, there's something fuzzy in his speaker. It's fuzzy.
So can you tell me? Well, it was always fuzzy. That's why he has that fuzzy wuzzy was a bear. That's why he's there. No, it was always fuzzy. So you would you translate then?
I didn't understand him.
Oh, you also?
I heard the words. It's a deeper thought than I'm capable of. I didn't understand it. It was. Is there a connection between the Lemineu and...
Very, very simply. Is Miut HaLavana a development, like something that happened cosmologically in the development of the solar system or the Earth moon system? Like Lemineu
is
something that happened in evolution.
Obviously. Everything happens only because it happens biologically. What do you think? There's some magic, some God that puts things together with intelligent design? If there would be intelligent design, the world would be a hell of a lot more intelligent than it is, wouldn't it?
So what would be the Miut HaLavana?
You're saying it's only biology that responds to existential ramifications? And formations of planets? And galaxies and stuff like that, that's just toys? Shalo yishanu es tafkidam, smeichim, lasas ritzein kainam. All right, we'll move on. I think we've had enough philosophy for the day. It's time to learn some Gemara. Okay. Now, we've got another problem in my separations, which is, as Ravasi points out, a contradiction. On the one hand, it says, V'totzei ha'aretz desha. Now, what day is that? That's the third day of Maaseh Bereishis. But after that, on the sixth day of Maaseh Bereishis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, V'chol siach ha'sodeh terem yeh ba'aretz. That doesn't make any sense. I thought there was already Vatotzi Aretz Desha back on Tuesday. So how is it that on Friday there isn't any Desha? So what does that teach us? Milamed Shiyatsu Deshaim V'amdu Al Petach Karka Ad Sheba Adam HaRishon U'vikesh Aleihem Rachamim V'yordu Geshamim V'tzamchu. It teaches us that there's two different levels. There's actually many more, but this is clearly two different levels that are nested in Maaseh Bereishis. One, which is the development and evolution of things, and the other is the interrelationship of the way that things make themselves part of a world which is a world that has humans. And there was no desha vis-a-vis Adam at all. It was basically sitting at the edge of the ground, ready to break out into a human world, and needed Adam Rishon to be mevakesh aleihem rachamim. When Adam came, and he was the one, Adam ayin la'aved es ha'adamah, he shows up, and he's oved es ha'adamah, and aveda means tvila, v'yordu gishamim, and samchu. What does this teach you? I mean, couldn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu make the world properly without Adam's tefillah? Oh, yes. But after all, HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves those tefillahs. So therefore, everybody's put into a situation where they got to make their lives work through those tefillahs. No, they say, God knows what I need. Don't worry about it. No. It doesn't work that way. It's what it is that you need to know that you need. That makes the difference. And then that relationship that's built on that, that is incredibly, as Gemara points out elsewhere, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has desire, similar to your desire. It's a sexual kind of desire. It's ta'ava. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu's desire is for tefillatan shel tzadikim. And that's the connection. Rav Nachman Bar Papa had a garden, and he bought all these very expensive seeds, puts in the seeds in the ground. He's got the highest. Nothing grows. Oy, my boy. So shari be bizri velot sama. So then he davened for each one of these things, and rain came, and then each one sprouted. And then he said, oh, this is what Rabasi was pointing out. Things work when Adam's brain is in them. So now, getting back to the list of kosher animals. So now, this is the Gemara that is Mechayev, the Gavi pen. Amazing. And we find that the Gemara also had such a concept as Gavi's magic pen. And so, it starts like this. Omer of Chana Barova, Hashesu'a birya bifnei atzmahi, now look, this is a very strange Gemara. Let's think about the Pasuk and what the problems are with this Pasuk and what forces the Gemara into this crazy thing. The Pasuk says, Ach et ze lo tochlu, and listen carefully, the following animal should not be eaten, mima'alei hagera umimafrisei haparasa hashesua, et hagamal vet harnevet vet hashafan ki ma'alei gera tzere, right? Now, how do we understand that word, hashesua? The pasuk makes no sense. The following things should not be eaten, even though they are animals that chew their cud and that have split hooves and that are shesua, which is shesa that we used before, that it's split all the way up. And then it lists the very things that are not split all the way up. The gamal, the arnevet, the shafan, and so on, right? So how do you understand that word, ashesua? Now, the only way, Lefi, the pashtus of the pasuk, to make sense of it is that it's a reference to including the next pasuk, which is ve'et hachazir, which actually is shesua, but it's not ma'alei gera, right? But then the whole thing is very weird. Why do we say the shesua on the first part and not on the last part of the chazir? Therefore, Chazal understand that the shesua itself is a reference to a type of animal. And it's a type of animal that appears to have two separate spines. As some learn, actually means two separate spines. Lamaisa, there were old German books that at the time of the wonderful German community that also set out to try to make, these were the first books that we have like today, Sichas Chulin, that draws quite a bit on those original scientific books. And they identify an animal that has a deep groove that runs through its vertebrae so that it looks like there's two completely different spines. And that's what they tie into the Shesua. But, okay, Pashtus, we understand this to mean that it has two separate side-by-side spines is what the Gemara seems to be saying. So it's some type of strange mutation. And it has Shnei Gabin v'Shnei Shidraot, so it has two spinal columns. Now, how in the world would Moshe Rabbeinu have known about any of this stuff? I mean, like, what is this? Is he going along with Naftali and with Ari over there in Kruger, and he's going through all of these game parks, and he's, what is he? He's a Kenigni? Is he a Balistari? Balistari, that sounds mamish Italian, but the problem is that there ain't no such word in Italian, so I don't know. But boy, doesn't it sound nice in Italian? Where's Dvorah when you need her? Balistari! Anyway, so what are those things? So those are hunters or shooters, right? And how did he know any of that stuff? So you see that the whole point of a Torah is that it was given min hashamayim, and that Moshe Rabbeinu said over the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he didn't have to know personally any of that stuff. So
sounds like Balistra, right?
It sounds very much, yeah, I don't know, but there's no such thing. Moshe, you have your permanently raised hand, our beloved Moshe Binyamin. Maybe it's because it's always has something to say. Mikan teshuvah le'omer ein Torah min hashamayim. This is a proof that there are things that Moshe couldn't have known. So Rav Chisda says to Gavi, who in those days was known as Rav Tachlifa Bar Avima, write down those words, Zilktov Knini Ublistori Ba'agadatech Ufarsha. So he used to keep a list of special words with their explanations. And that was the original Gavi list. And so Rav Chisda said to him, write down those words and make sure that you keep a record of them. Now we had another time that we also meant we met up with the Gavi list in those days, because that was a reference to the Chamesha Sarnei Plishtim. So it says in the Pasuk, Chamesha Sarnei Plishtim, Ha'azati, Ha'ashdodi, Ha'ashkeloni, Ha'giti, Va'ekroni, Ve'ha'avim. Now, you got to admit, that's pretty weird. You say the five Sarnei Plishtim, and then you list six. What is that supposed to mean? Amar Chamisha, the Pasuk announces, this is the list of the five Sarnei Plishtim, and then you come out with Choshev Shita? Omer Rabbi Yonatan. That's because the Arunki Shalem were Chamisha, the Chashuvim. Those were only five. And Rav Chisda says to Rav Tagavi, Rabbi Tachlifa Baravina, write that down, Arunki. Nobody's going to remember. That's a grand word. I love that. Arunki. So, Ktov Arunki, Bagadatech, Uvarsha. Make sure that people will know what this is about. But anyway, once we're on the topic, this is different than the way Rav explained it, because Rav said, actually, the Avim, it's not a question of whether they're Choshev or not. The Avim weren't really Plishtim at all. The Avim were Chuti. They were the original, they were from Teman, and they decided to go off and to join up with the Plishtim, and they really came from Esav, because the Temanim, they come from Eliphaz. So one of his children, were Avim, and they left their area in Teman, which was Esav land, and they went to join up with the Plishtim because they wanted to be exposed to the broad world of the Plishtim, who got all around the place and had all of these multiple gods, and then the Barnea could write articles on them. And after all, if they would have stayed over there with the Chutis, I mean, like, who's going to notice the Avim? But like this, aha, they get to be part of important neighborhoods. So the fact is that originally they came meet Tema. Tanya
and the fact that we're fighting the Chutim and the Azatim at the same time, is that not shocking?
Beautiful. It really is. Har Esav. Tanya Nami Achi. Avim mi Temanbo. Actually, the Avim came from Teman. If you would have said to somebody just 5 years ago, you know, Temanim, what do you mean Temanim? Temanim are like half-naked idiots waving swords. Like, we're going to be fighting, then get out of here. It's amazing. So, Tanya Nami Ochim. Loma Nikra Shmom Avim. So, why were they called Avim? Because Avim means Ivut. It means things that are destruction. These are people she'ivtu'et mekomam. They wrecked their own place by leaving it barren and making a mess of Teman. Used to be such a nice place. And then they go out to be able to have fun in the broad world, leaving their own area to go into decay. Now, when Akiva sits in front of the frameworks, or at least the E-works, then we don't know where he is. A little bit further, just a little bit. There we go. Okay, excellent. All right. So that's why they're called Avim, or they could be Avim, because we're reading the Avim instead of as an ayin, we're reading it with an aleph. So Avim she'ivu le'elohut harbe. So we use that same lashon, unfortunately, by the Egel and the Erev Rav. They wanted a lot of potential worship. You know, it's sort of like the Beatles song, you know, you mention every insane god in the world, you know, and you sing about, oh, Lord, and how wonderful it is to be close to you. I don't care what your name is. Yeah, these guys, the more, the merrier. So they were evil elohut harbe. And another reason to call them Avim is because kol haroe otam al chazato avit, they were basically like the Rephaim. Anybody who saw one of those guys, he would basically go into terror. He would start, his whole body would start shaking. Amar Rav Yosef, yes, indeed, these guys, they weren't human. They had 16 rows of teeth apiece. Yow! Amar Shimon ben Lakish, you know, there's a lot of psukim that read like garbage. And basically, if you were the editor of the Torah, you would say, cut that, cut that, cut that. And they ought to be just burned because they make a mess of the Torah. People think the Torah is a joke. And it's terrible that they're there. Harbe mikra ocheru in lisrof. So on the surface, they look like they ought to be burned out, you know? And in the end, it turns out that hein gufei Torah, they end up being so important and teaching you the most incredible things, but you have to be able to learn to read them. Let me give you an example if we're on the topic of the Avim. It says, Ha'avim ha'yoshvim b'chatzirim ad Aza. So, what does this mean? The Avim, who were yoshvim b'chatzirim, this is in the middle of Dvorim. Kaftorim ha'yotzim mikaftor ishmidum. These Kaftorim who went out of the land of Kaftor, they wiped them out and took over their place. What do we care? I don't know even who these Avim are. I don't even know who these Kaftorim are. And what are we talking about? Ancient history over here in the middle of our Torah. What do we need to even remember these people? My Nafkalan Mina. What do we learn out of that? Doesn't mean anything. Ah, it means a great deal. I'll tell you why. Remember that Avimelech had made Avram Avinu swear, Im tishkor li ulnini ulnechdi. So what was the reason that we weren't able to conquer the areas in Eretz Yisrael, including Yerushalayim up until the time of David HaMelech? That we had a promise made to Avimelech that we were not able to attack anyone that came from him. And these generations of Avimelech were still around, even though for us, so much had actually taken place in between. And therefore, it would have been usher at the time of Kivush Haaretz for Yisrael to go ahead and destroy the Avim. Well, Marak Kadosh Baruch Hu, okay, let's send the Kaftorim to do the dirty work. So, Leitu Kaftorim, Livku Mi Avim, Dainu Plishtim. So the Avim, Rish Lakish disagrees and he holds the Avim are Plishtim. But let the Kaftorim come and take it away from the Avim who were descendants of Avimelech, and then Yisrael can come and conquer it from the Kaftorim. Leitu Yisrael and Livkumi Kaftorim. Kayotze Badavar. And we have other psukim that achieve the same idea, so that we just had Ki Cheshbon Ir Sichon Melech Amori, Vuhu Nilcham B'Melech Moav Harishon. Remember, we just had this pasuk, but for some reason, it's important for us to know that this not milchama with Sichon and so on, it was actually part of ancient history, and it's true that Cheshbon used to belong to Moab. But who nilcham b'melach Moab arishon? Vayikach et kol artzo miyado ad Arnon. Why is that important? Because my nafkamina, the amalo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael atatzaris Moab. Didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell us that we're not allowed to make any problems for Moab? And instead we go and fight and take over all of this area that used to belong to Moab? Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, let Sichon come along first, who is from the Amori, and let him be taken away in war from Moab, and then Yisroel could come along and take away that whole area from Sichon, because now it belongs to the Amori. Perfect. Behind the armor of Papa, Amon and Moab, Tiaru b'Sichon, they were made tohar for Yisroel in through what it was that Sichon did. And that actually, that means that if you have a milchama, it changes the nature of the land, and it was turned it into the land not of Moab. There's another place where we find something that makes no important difference to us. And F. Afal Pikein, says Rish Lakish, you learned something very beautiful from it. So you've got this weird pasuk when it talks about Har Hermon, that it says, for no reason, Sidonim Yikru'ula Hermon Sirion, He'emori Yikru'ula Snir. Well, I mean, like, really? Do I need to know the names that Goyim call the mountains? Hermon is called Snir. Hermon is called Sirion. Like, what does that matter? Ah, I'll tell you what it matters. Tana, Snir, the Sirion, were mountains of Eretz Yisrael. And yet, it makes no sense to say that Sidon and the Amorim, they weren't living there. So what do you mean they called it the Hermon, they called it the Snir and Sirion? I'm so confused. What does that mean? It means that basically, at the border, if they have anything, the border, Har Hermon, is, of course, a whole system of mountains. And it was on the border between the Amorim and the Sidonim. Now, each of those countries, they went ahead and they built a city that they gave the name of the city on the lower part of the Hermon system. And they gave it a name as if it were one of the Harim of Eretz Yisrael. So just like in America, you know, you go through every state and you come to Hebron and you come to Goshen and you come to Bethel and so on.
Shiloh.
What's that?
Shiloh.
They pronounce it Shiloh. I always thought it was Shiloh. Okay. You come to Shiloh. All of Barnea's neighborhoods are somehow in the green hills of England or New England. But anyway, so how do you explain that? It's exactly this thing. They built these cities, and in order to give them the chashivas, they gave the cities the names of mountains of Eretz Yisrael. So, Malam Mishkol Echad V'Echad Miumoto Olam, every single one of the nations of the world, they built big cities to themselves that they could call with the name of one of the mountains of Eretz Yisrael. Malam Edecha, Shafilu Harei Eretz Yisrael. These are not areas that are productive agriculturally up on top of these ice mountains. But even the Harim of Eretz Yisrael, they stand out, and therefore people want to call their cities on that name. They're Chavivim Alumot Olam. That's how valuable they are. And I'll show you another pasuk that doesn't seem to tell you anything important, and you could see something so beautiful. When the Torah describes what it is that Yosef did in Mitzrayim, so it says, for no particular reason, it seems, Ve'et ha'am he'avirota le'arim, so that he took the population from one city to another, and he moved them around. That's his strategy for making sure that people don't make the mistake of claiming that this is ancient Palestinian territory and make up new nations and so on as they go along. So because of that, he transferred them so that they shouldn't have any such ridiculous claims. Okay, that's a beautiful geopolitical move, but what does it have to do with us? My nafkamina, what have we learned from there? The Lolik, he did that, the Lolik Lech of Galvata. It's telling us this so that we should understand that Yosef's entire vision during all of those years was to prepare the road for the Shvatim to come to Eretz Mitzrayim. And in order for them not to be subject to being looked down upon because they are people that came from elsewhere, he turned the entire country into people that came from elsewhere. So who's going to be able to say anything? That was all part of the psychological effort that Yosef HaTzadik put in preparing the road. Okay, quite a daf.